Hello and welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. My name is Peter Bean, and I'll be your host. In today's episode, I'm joined by Chris Robinson to talk about the draft and get an update on what he's been doing since retiring at the end of last season. Chris is coaching now with the Great Lake Canadians program in London, Ontario, and also has coached with the junior national team. Thanks for being here, Chris.
Oh, thanks for having me, Peter. I love doing it.
So the first thing I want to ask you is how you've been enjoying coaching. I read your blog, and in your blog a couple months back, you were really liking it. It's been a little while now, so I wanted to get an update on how life as a coach has been.
I think I'm learning every day. I think sometimes you take things for granted when you play about your coaches, and I'm learning now that it's not as easy as some of those great coaches I've had make it look. So. It's not as easy as grabbing a bat and going up there and taking care of it yourself getting back there and calling a game yourself. So it's been a learning process for me, I think for all of us. We're very fortunate that we got, two great groups of kids and two great groups of parents. So we've been very, very lucky that way. But, I think we're continuing to learn. I think, you think you know a lot about the game, and then you're put in a completely different role, a completely different position, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I imagine that's a surreal experience, being coached for most of your life, and then to flip over to the other side, I could see that as being very eye-opening.
I think the technical part of things is what comes easy to us because of what Adam's built here in London with Centerfield Sports. We've had the opportunity to coach in lessons and teach kids for years, but it now as you kind of transition into into the game stuff that we haven't really had a whole lot of experience in terms of coaching. So that's been the big transition, but it's been, as I said, it's been a lot of fun, and I really, really, truly enjoy what we're doing. It's a lot of fun.
Now, I haven't talked to you since you hit that home run last season, but I wanted to ask you about that at-bat and what was going through your mind as it unfolded. I've been waiting to ask you this question for a long time.
Well, it was a funny night. As soon as I got up there, I became like a professional pinch hitter, which I'd never done in my career, really, so I kind of had to learn how to get loose, stay loose, and do the things that the pinch hitters do, that night, for some reason, one of our bullpen catchers wasn't there that night. So they came to me. They said, "We need you in the bullpen." And I said, "Okay, that's no problem." So, I mean, it's about the furthest place away from home plate as you could be in the stadium, I think. And so I didn't shut it down mentally, but I figured, you know what, like the chance of me running across the field to pinch hit are pretty slim tonight. So I was sitting there in the bullpen, and I was warming somebody up in the eighth inning, and sure enough, the phone rings, and our bullpen coach says, "Robbie, in between innings, you got to run across." So sure enough, I had to run across the field in between innings to get in there, and then I was batting, I think, third or fourth. And so I guess, I don't know, I just didn't have the time to think about it. I just jumped up there, and it was my seventh at-bat. So in terms of nerves and knowing what to expect, that was kind of past, and I was just at the point where I just really wanted to get the hit and get it out of the way and be able to say I got a hit in the big leagues. And for it to happen the way it did and for it to be a home run, that was just kind of icing on the cake. And still, I think to the point, I think it'll always be a little unbelievable to me that, not being a home run hitter, not being a guy that drove the ball to the ballpark consistently, for my first big league hit to be a home run, it was pretty I don't know what you believe in, but there was something more going on there that night.
It was great. We all loved it back here. When I remember what I heard about it, I thought it was just fantastic. That's what I love about baseball. Baseball gives us these great moments and these great stories, I think, far more than any other sport does. Let's get into the draft. Because I got a whole bunch of things I want to ask you about the draft. But the first one thing I wanted to know is, did you follow it much this year?
I did. I was very interested. I thought it was an interesting year. I follow it every year, and I thought just for the Canadian guys, and this year obviously knowing them a little bit better because I've had the opportunity to work with the junior team. But I thought this year out of all of them, I think it was very interesting because there was. Nothing was really set in stone. Like when Brett was there, you knew Brett was going to be, going to be a high pick. You knew Philippe was going to sneak in there in the first round, you thought, too. And obviously back in the days, you know, in my draft class, you knew Adam and Jeff were going to be first rounders. But this year with Gareth, it just seemed to be that question mark. And, you know, for some reason, obviously physically and everything, he was talented enough to be a first rounder for sure. But it seemed, in talking to some of the scouts and kind of getting a feel for it, you just didn't know what was going to happen. And I thought that was the case not only with Gareth, but with a lot of those guys. So I was really, really interested in it. Now, I had the opportunity to follow it Thursday night, Friday a little bit as well, and then Saturday we were on the field, obviously the day that was probably the most interesting to follow for us Canadians. But so I didn't get a chance to really follow it yesterday until I got home and just kind of quickly ran over your guys' summary there. But, you know, I think it's an exciting time for those guys, and I think it's a disappointing time for a lot of the guys as well. I can think, you know, probably the worst day of my life was my draft year in high school, where I thought I was going to be going higher, and it didn't happen. So, but everything happens for a reason, so I was lucky.
You bring up your drafts. I'm curious how often you think back on your drafts, either one of them.
You know, every year, I think, as I said, as disappointing as the first one was for me, it was the exact opposite 3 years later. So, I'd always promised myself that I'd be on the golf course after my high school draft and the disappointment. I'd always promised myself that I'd be on the golf course if I ever went through it again. But, you know, the feeling I got, I had a feel a couple nights before the draft that there was a couple teams interested in me and in the area that they were interested. So, you know, not that it was inevitable, but I had a lot better feel and in terms of where it was going to be at that year. So, and again, it set up for one of the more memorable moments of my baseball career. And that was, you know, sitting in my mom and dad's den there with, you know, it was my girlfriend at the time, but she's my wife now, Amy, and her sister and my sister and my mom and dad, and getting to go through that and getting to hear your name called. And, that was one of the highlights of my career.
You talked about draft disappointment, and it reminded me of something that I noticed. I spent the last 3 days literally monitoring social media, just reading all the Canadian tweets and following all the players and that sort of thing. And I saw a couple of tweets towards the end of day three that one of them that stands out in my memory, I remember it well. It was the tweet said, "Just looking for a chance to play, keeping my head up." And I think about, you know, things like the Padres drafting Johnny Manziel and some teams, they don't pick towards the end of the draft. Do you think the draft is too long, creating sort of unreal expectations for some kids at the bottom? I mean, if teams aren't picking and they're making picks that don't matter, and then you've got these kids who, you know, their hearts are broken. What do you think about that and just the whole format and how that can be better?
Yeah, you know what? I think they've minimized it a little bit even since when I went through it. I think it was 50 rounds back when I was doing it, and now it's 40. And again, I think, as you said, if teams aren't drafting, if there's rounds where teams are just bypassing their picks, then I think that's a perfect example that it is too long. I think, you know, you cut it short to the point where everybody wants to use their picks, and I just don't get that aspect of it. You know, you get your opportunities. Who knows? You take a flyer in the late rounds, and who knows what can happen. I know of a couple guys, more than a couple guys in Canada that would have loved the opportunity to play and probably could be very good professional baseball players, and you know they weren't selected. So why not use one of those picks that you're just throwing in the garbage to take a kid that's, you know, willing to bust his butt and do anything he can to play professional baseball, but. You know, I think at the same time, you know, I didn't understand it at the time, but I think for a lot of those guys that the disappointment they had, you know what, I was devastated, but I didn't know at the time, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, I wasn't ready to go play. I really wasn't. And, you know, I think some of the guys that, you know, I got to deal with once the junior national team, you know, a handful of them probably could have went out and played. And the guys that were drafted, the guys that did end up getting drafted, they could go out and be very good professional players. Now, there was probably, you know, at least a half a dozen guys there that I expected to go. And almost to the point, it's not to be selfish, but you almost, you almost hope that a couple of those guys don't go because, as I said, you don't want to have them forced into I got drafted, I want to sign, instead of passing up on, you know, a great school or an opportunity where they could go and get better and then come out in 3 years and have a better opportunity in pro ball. And I think the problem with that is I've lived the pro ball life and I see how a 35th round draft pick gets treated and I see how a 40th round draft pick gets treated. And, you know, whether it's right and wrong, you just don't get the opportunity that the top 10 rounder gets. And that's the case. So even if a kid's the atypical professional player and he's a 40th round pick, it's a battle. It's going to be a grind for him. It's an uphill battle from day one. He's going to have to perform at every single level. And so that's the one thing where, you know, I don't want to say advice, but that's the one thing where I'm glad that, you know, in hindsight now, it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. So hopefully that's the case for some of the guys that were disappointed.
What do you think of the new system, the new draft system with slot values and that sort of thing? Do you think that's improved the draft or not?
I think to a certain extent it has. I also think that teams are just kind of finding a way around certain things. Like, you know, if they have a kid where there's a signability issue and they're not sure about him, then, you know, instead of taking him in the first 10 rounds, they can, you know, take him in the 16th and kind of, you know, see if they have any money left over and they can still, you know, pay one pick, you know, a certain amount of money late. And so I think just obviously not to the extent that they used to be able to do it. But I don't think it's changed an enormous amount. I think it seems that maybe the money up front makes negotiations easier. I think most clubs would agree with that. Now, in the first round, it's still going to cost teams a lot of money, it seems. But I don't know. I'm kind of impartial on that. I'm not sure. I'm not exactly sure what whether the old way was better.
Well, it's had an effect, definitely, on the Canadians that have come through our draft list in the last couple of years. It happened again this year where, you know, top pitcher on our draft list ends up falling quite a few rounds for that exact reason, for signability and, you know, what it takes to walk away from school. Then you've even got the question of should that even be a question, walking away from school. It's interesting. I like yourself, not necessarily sure how I feel about it. I just feel that it isn't right. You know, the top players should get drafted in the top positions. That's just something that to me seems like should be the norm, and it isn't.
Absolutely, and I think you're right. I think you're talking about Zach Pop there, and you know, and. And I'm sure he's disappointed, you know, because you hear everything, you know, where in terms of where scouts have him here and have him there, and whether it's fifth round, whether it's eighth round, whether it's tenth round, you know, and as a kid, you don't know any different. You really don't. You assume that whoever's telling you this is in the know, and you know what? And the people telling them that, in their defense, sometimes they do feel that, and they really do think that that's going to happen, and then it just is kind of out of their hands when it becomes decision time. So, it's unfortunate because you know your goal in the game is to go out and do the things that you like, set some goals, and for most of these kids, it's, you know, the first main goal is, well, let's I want to go to school, I want to get a good school, and then sometimes they get a good school and that hurts them, you know, like for Zach in Kentucky. I mean, all of a sudden a scout sees Kentucky and it's okay, well, we got to pay him pretty good money to get him out of that, where, you know, without even really talking to him, it just kind of comes with the territory of a good school. So, you know, now there's ways that players can voice, you know, what their intentions are and what they're looking to do. So, I mean, it's both sides of the coin there, but, you know, I think that is, it's unfortunate for guys like that because it is affecting them.
Well, I hope Pop looks back at the history, and it's an interesting short history over the last few years. You've got Quantrill, Kellogg, and now Pop. Quantrill and Kellogg made the college decision, and I think we know for sure now it was the right decision for both of them. So hopefully it goes.
Yeah, they're doing okay.
For Zach Pop. Yeah, they're doing just fine. Going back to coaching, I want to ask you about how you've prepared and advised players leading up to this year's draft and your role as a coach.
Well, I think it's difficult to, and I understand that's the good part about, you know, that's one of the most enjoyable parts of what we're doing is we've been through it. You know, myself and Adam and Jeff, who are at home, Jamie, who's still playing, but we've all been through it, and we've all gone through different kind of different routes, and so we can kind of speak on experience to the parents. But the one thing that I thought, and it was difficult in their shoes, and I remember that, is to not look at things and not read into things and not take so much. Oh man, I'm not on the Baseball America top 500 list, you know, like, or oh, I'm on this list and I'm not on that list, and oh, this list has me as a fifth rounder. That's great. And you can just get so caught up in that, because a lot of it comes down to opinion, right? Like, you have no idea who's making those opinions, and it's tough because then you get caught up with it. I've had conversations with parents saying, well, you know, should we be worried if he's not on, you know, Baseball America's list? And it's just like, no. Like, if the Miami Marlins come in and see a kid play, they like him or they don't. And so that's the one thing I've been trying to advise is, you know, like, obviously there's some great things out there, and there's great avenues to the Canadian Baseball Network, for example, great avenue to learn about the players and learn about everything that we do here in baseball in Canada. I said, but just, you know, be careful of when you're reading into things, and that you don't make it, you don't make any website like Baseball America or any of these scouting websites where it's the Bible, because it really isn't. At the end of the day, the Toronto Blue Jays are going to pick selected on who the Toronto Blue Jays think are the best players. So, you know, and that's the one thing I've kind of tried to force upon them, that, you know, just be careful.
Now, I get this, I ask this question a lot, and when I'm talking to the players after they're drafted, before the draft, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on it and whether or not Canadian kids they're at a disadvantage going up against the Americans. I've heard, you know, that they don't get as many reps, and then that's a disadvantage, they don't get seen as much, but at the same time they have more wood bat exposure if they're a hitter and they play at a higher level when they do come down. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think it's starting to become a little bit more neutral for us. I think it used to be more of an issue but now with the indoor facilities we have and the programs that you have and the, you know, our kids are truly starting to play 10, 12 months a year. So, and they're not down in Texas and they're not down in California and they're not getting to do it outside, but they are getting to go to top showcases. They are getting to go to, you know, great tournaments and there's so many good programs in the country now that are just continuing to take their kids, you know, and get them exposure. And I mean, I know on our side, that's our main goal. And that's the number one thing we try to do, is just try to expose our kids to as many college recruiters, to as many pro scouts as we can. And I think that's just becoming more and more the norm here for Canadians. And I mean, I think you have to do that. I think where we are and in the climate we live in, and you know, you have to go to them, you have to go to the people, and you have to go to the scouts, you have to go to the recruiters, because, you know, sure the good ones get up here, and we got a great, you know, great Canadian scouting system in terms of, you know, the Canadian scouts we have, but, you know, you got to get them in front of the schools as well, and that's how you get them down, and you got to get them down there in front of them, because not a lot of schools come up here. So you know, I think that it's starting to kind of neutralize just because of those showcases and the ability to get in them for the Canadians.
Do you think there's anything that we could be doing in the Canadian baseball community to better the situation for our players?
That's a good question. I don't think so. I mean, the junior national team program right now, I mean, for those unfamiliar, I think it would, you'd be hard pressed to find a better program in the entire world than the Canadian Junior National program in terms of what Greg's done and the caliber that they get to play at and the continued, you know, they 4 or 5 trips now as of the year, and they're playing professionals, they're playing college, they're playing all this top talent. They get to see, I mean, they're exposed as much as anybody to scouts and recruiters. And I think that you just continue to do that. You continue to try to build it at the grassroots. And I think that, you know, hopefully the better, you know, the more effective that national team continues to become, and you're going to see the more and more, you know, Cal Quantrills and more Kellogg's and those players come out of the program, just because you're playing at such a high level when you're 16, 17, 18 years old, that, you know, even if you're not having a ton of success at that level, it's a little overwhelming at times, but, you know, in the long run, it's going to help you. Garrett's a perfect example of that. Not a real successful player in the last, you know, in a couple of the trips with the national team. But you know what? In the long run, you know, Garrett's going to step right into professional baseball, and there's no overwhelming experience because he's faced all the guys that he's going to face. So hopefully you see the effects of that kind of at the back end rather than, you know, during.
Let's talk about some of the kids that you coached in on the junior national team when you joined the coaching team this year. Who are some of the players that you got a chance to work with that were drafted over the last few days?
Most notably, I think it was Mitchell Robinson. He was kind of he's going to do a little bit of catching for that team, and you know, kind of in a conversion type role, and. You know, so I got to work a lot with him. I really liked his approach at the plate. I thought he's a mature player, I thought that he would have had a great opportunity there to play professional baseball if he wanted, and obviously getting drafted he does. But he also has on the back end he has that great scholarship. So it's you know, for Mitch, it's probably, you know, probably looking at going to play at school, and you know what, for a guy like that, you think that in 3 years he's going to have the ability to do it again and go through the draft process again, and hopefully, like a lot of guys, it's a better opportunity for him at the back end. And you know, getting to watch Gareth for the 10 days that I got to see him, I mean, that's what they look like. You know what I mean? Like it's a physical, it's an athletic, it's a toolsy guy that, I mean, you walk into a locker room in minor league baseball or in spring training, and those are what the prospects look like. He's going to fit the mold really well, and I think it's just going to come down to him getting to go out and play every day and perform. And I think, you know, you think with the tool set that he has, it's you know, it's something's got to give. It's inevitable that he's going to be an impact player in my mind, and hopefully he can go out and do that sooner rather than later.
Who else did you work with? I think you mentioned earlier that you also worked with Bykowski.
Yeah, Biker. I got a chance to work with him. He's a great kid. He really is. He's a competitor. He can, I think. And then he went with the Reds, so that's a good fit. Obviously, I'm not sure in terms of he's got a great scholarship as well at Florida Gulf Coast there. So I'm not sure what his decision will be. But again, either way, he's put himself by getting a good school. He's put himself in a position, one, to negotiate, and two, at least you know, have a great backup plan if the pro side doesn't work out up front, and just, you know, another guy that can go to school and would be surprised if after 3 years he doesn't have the opportunity to do it again.
Yeah, I bet you there's going to be some interesting conversations between him and Dad about what to do next.
We'll see who the best negotiator is out of that family pretty quickly. But yeah, it's always interesting to see that, and for I would imagine it's a proud papa too to be able to you know, take his son and pick his son after years of doing it and years of scouting other people's kids. He finally gets to call the name of his own kid. That's got to be a pretty special moment for that entire family.
Absolutely. Hey, are you you're on the coaching roster for Tournament 12, right?
I am.
You looking forward to that?
Oh, I can't wait. I said that I had a pretty good excuse to miss the first one last year, but I did miss it. I was we were looking forward to doing it all, and so now I'm gonna be a part of it. I think I'm with Sterney and Rob Butler and Tanner Watson, so all former teammates of mine. So it'll be a it'll be a fun week. But I'm you know, you just, everything comes back to it. It seems like every conversation, every, you know, every team we're playing, we always, it always comes back to the tournament 12. So I'm excited to. It's been impressive how it's taken off. It really has. I think you know, Baseball Canada, the Blue Jays have done such a tremendous job, and even in the talks with recruiters that I have now about our guys, the tournament 12 is people know about it. Even, you know, the recruiters know about it, and it's just going to continue to grow. So to be a part of it, it's pretty cool for me. But I'm just looking forward to getting to see the baseball and seeing all the kids.
Yeah, it's it definitely was a success. We there's an interesting thing that not a lot of people would be able to see other than myself and maybe Bob, but really speaks to the interest for the tournament and amateur baseball in Canada. At the network, our three biggest days of the year just finished. For those 3 days, our website is just roaring along at 10 times the rate it normally is. But during the week leading up to Tournament 12 and on the days of the tournament, we almost matched the level of interest and activity on the website that we did during the draft, which was just spectacular to see. All of these people reading about all of these players and learning about these players and them getting that exposure from something that was being done by Canadians in Canada for Canadians. It was just a great thing to see. It really was.
Yeah, and I think it's only going to get better, right? Like, and I was one of those people. I was one of those guys sitting in San Diego. I was updating Twitter feeds and following all you guys and seeing what was going on, and then at the same time texting the guys that were there to see how it was going. You know, I think it's the interest level is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, and I think that, you know, it's something that could become, you know, who knows how big it could become. This is pretty exciting.
Let's hope it becomes huge. I think it will,
yeah.
But time will tell. I got one more question for you. We are about, I guess, about a year away from the Pan Am Games now. you know what's coming.
I'm going to stop you from asking
the itch.
It.
Getting the itch, thinking about
it. You know what? The song, the Toby Keith song, comes to mind. Where it's I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. Is that how it goes? But I said I think if I were to come back and do something crazy like that, they'd need to hire probably at least a dozen training staff to get me through it. So. You know, we'll have to see when the time comes. But you know, as I said, back to the junior program and the Canadians playing in the minor leagues now, and the Canadians playing in the big leagues. I think we'll be pretty comfortable in the fact that there'll be a better option than some old dude coming off the couch.
Maybe coaching.
maybe we're pretty well set on that side too. With the coaching staff we have with that team. But any way I can be involved, it's, you know, being that's I did a talk last night, and you know, I said that the night in San Diego was pretty special, hitting a home run. But when I look back on my career, I want to be you know, if it's my choice, I'd like to be remembered. And I think, you know, the things I remember the most and that defined me as a player was my time with the national team all those years, and getting to play with the group of guys that we got to play with, and all the places we went. That's what I remember about my career, and hopefully that's how I'm remembered. So any opportunity I have, whether it's on the coaching side or however they need me, I'll wash some jerseys too if they need me. So who knows?
Well, I know I'll be there. I can't wait to watch on home field. That's going to be a lot of fun. Before I let you go, I don't know if you have MLB TV, or even if it's on television, because I'm not near one, but Dodgers game right now, two batters away from one of your buddies coming up to bat, and I think what is his first start in the majors?
This is his first start, yep, and it's funny you said that. I have it on in front of me right now on my iPad, so I was like, well, if we're on here chatting, I better make sure I don't miss his first hit, because I got a really good feeling that it's going to be today. I said to him, I've been joking with him, saying, as long as you don't hit your home run, your first home run before your seventh at bat, at least I could still have that over his head. But you know what? It'll be interesting to see.
And with that, we'll wrap up this episode. I'd like to thank Chris again for coming back on the show. I'd also like to thank the Isotopes for the music and Effective Business Video before the production. Our next episode will be the draft wrap-up and review with Bob Elliott and Andrew Hendricks. We're currently compiling interviews for that episode, and we hope to have it up. Keep checking the website regularly as we continue to post new features on all of the 16 draft episodes. We can expect new content well in the next week. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. Hope you enjoyed the draft. My name is Peter Bean, signing off.